Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 147, 8 Tips for Surviving Holiday Hosting. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking and getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun, picking up some useful tips, which is exactly what I hope you get out of this episode today, because today I am going to talk about some things you can do to make your life as a host of a holiday gathering a little more survivable, a little lower stress perhaps, or just easier in general. So we're going to get to that in just a moment. Before I do, I just want to remind you, of course, as always, you can send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Always looking for interesting tidbits from listeners, whether you just want to say hello, have cooking or recipe or kitchen utensil tips you want to share or ideas for future episodes. I'd love to hear it. Love to hear from each and every one of you. If email isn't your thing and you prefer Facebook, you could always head over to the Facebook group. Easy way to get there is kitchencounterpodcast.com/group, and that will take you over to the Facebook group where you can ask to be let in. I just want to point one quick thing out about that group too, by the way, is I do ask a couple of questions of everybody who applies to get in because it is a closed group. And they're pretty simple questions. How skillful of a home cook do you consider yourself, and what are you looking to learn more about? Those are the two questions basically. I've noticed if I let people in when they don't answer the questions, there's been a few times where, obviously it's folks just getting into spam and they post weird stuff. So I end up having to kick them out of the group. So I'm hesitant to let anybody in who doesn't answer those questions, even with just a few words each. So if you are thinking of joining, please just take a second to answer the question, so I know you're not just like spam joining groups in hopes to get in. Anyway, enough of that. But it is a fun little group, a lot of great people sharing tips and tricks and pictures and things like that. So if a little bit more community is what you're after, I definitely recommend that. If you want to get to the show notes for this particular episode, you can head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/147. That's just the numbers 147, and it will take you to the show notes for this particular episode. All right, good enough. Let's hop into 8 tips for surviving holiday hosting. Well, it has been a while since I've done any sort of a numbered list for tips on any particular thing. I think it's been a while. I know I just reposted my 10 tips to avoid turkey trauma right before this episode, which was a replay from 2017. But I thought it was time to bring something new to the table, so to speak. So I wanted to speak to a few things that I think, if you are hosting a holiday get-together, can make your life a little bit easier. And I'm going to focus more on the food aspect of hosting. I'm not going to talk about planning a party or anything like that. But the things that really center around the dining room table and the kitchen, so to speak. Also, these are sort of general tips. I'm not going to go into any specific like hacks or real specific tips on how to make a particular dish or anything like that. So keep in mind, these are kind of high level, but these are things I've learned over the years because I've hosted quite a few, Thanksgiving dinners or Christmas dinners or whatever other holiday type of dinners. And these are a few things that I try to keep in mind. I don't always perfectly follow them, but I try to keep them in mind. And I think they make my life and the life of my guests actually a little bit easier on the day of the holiday gathering. So I know some of you listening have never hosted a holiday get together. Maybe you're going to be doing it for the first time this year. And on the other end of the spectrum, I know a lot of you have probably been doing this for a really, really long time and have hosted many holiday get togethers. So hopefully you pick up something new in this list, something useful. But I know you have good tips too, so I would love to hear them. So if you shoot me a note over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com with any interesting holiday hosting tips that you've got, or head over to the Facebook group and post them there. I would love to share those with folks. Maybe the next episode I can do sort of a follow-up and share other tips if I get any that come in. All right, we ready to hop into the list? Let's do it. Okay, first things first, tip number one. You need to know who your guests are, and you need to know their needs. Of course, knowing who your guests are just helps you plan your menu in general, how many people, how many adults, how many kids, that sort of a thing. But it knowing what their needs are can also help you anticipate any special dietary restrictions that you might have. If you know of specific picky eaters that you may need to accommodate, especially at the kids' table, knowing who your guests are and knowing what their needs are ahead of time can really help you avoid any last minute day of cooking related stress because you're trying to scramble to find something gluten-free to serve a guest, or maybe you have some vegetarians or vegans coming to dinner and you just don't have any great options for them. So knowing this ahead of time is really important. And I know there are a couple of schools of thought when it comes to this. I myself will eat practically anything. I don't have any food allergies. I don't have any particular dietary restrictions. On any given day, perhaps I'm trying to eat more or less of any particular thing, but at the end of the day, I can really eat anything. So I'm an easy person to cook for, but some folks feel that people with food allergies or dietary restrictions or things like that are kind of a pain to deal with. And it can feel that way when you're trying to cook a big meal for a lot of different palates and a lot of different people on a stressful holiday, you know, get together. But I really would encourage you to embrace the idea of understanding what your guests really need or can or cannot eat. One, it's just a good thing to do as a host. You should try to accommodate the folks that are coming to your table. They will certainly appreciate it. But on the other hand, it also kind of flexes your brain muscles, your cooking prowess as a home cook when you have to maybe get just a little creative. Maybe you have somebody who can't have any dairy, so you're going to have to figure out a way to substitute some dairy in some of the dishes you're making, right? You can't put butter in your mashed potatoes, for example. So what are you going to do about that? So knowing who your guests are and their needs ahead of time will help you accommodate as many people as you possibly can. You'll appreciate not having to stress about it at the last minute. They will appreciate having been thought of. And of course, to know this, you're going to have to ask some questions. If you know the people and you already know all that who are coming to your get-together, that's an easy one. But if you have some unknown guests or some new guests, new family members perhaps, new in-laws, things like that, just take a little time and thoughtfully, you know, reach out to them and ask them if there's anything you should, you know, or be prepared for. That sounds very clinical, but you know, you can be more tactful in the way you ask, just so you know that when they show up at your place and sit around your table, that you will have already anticipated what they will need and have done your best to take care of them. Okay, so that's the first tip, is knowing your guests and their needs. All right, tip number two I call simplify and edit. I think there's a tendency as a home cook, especially if you really love cooking and enjoy making food for other people, when you're planning and thinking about a holiday get together where people are coming to your home or coming around your table to enjoy what you prepare, that you kind of over plan and you think you're going to make all of this food and it's going to be, a cornucopia of delicious flavors, and you're going to have an amazing turkey roasted, for example, and all these side dishes, and you're going to scratch and make some great desserts. And I've done this myself, and it doesn't take long before at the day of, you're trying to get everything to come together and you're like, why in the world did I decide to make all this stuff? It's crazy. I mean, there's not even room on the table for all the food and all the different dishes you're trying to pull together. So one thing I learned a long time ago is that you need to simplify and edit. You need to focus on, what I'm saying is you need to pare back to the necessities. What is it that you think you absolutely have to have at the table? And then branch out from there. Don't start with a huge idea of all these things you're going to make and then try to edit back, because that's going to be a difficult thing to do. But start with the most basic. So for me, for a Thanksgiving dinner, I might say, look, I know I need to have a turkey. I know I need to have mashed potatoes and gravy. And I know I need to have carrots, for example, a carrot dish. So that's three things that I would start with. I would make a little bit more than that, maybe have a couple of other options. But, you know, I don't need seven side dishes and five appetizers and four desserts. And I don't need to scratch make three loaves of bread. And it just saves me a lot of time and stress when I narrow down to begin with and then slowly branch out. Now, this does kind of relate to tip number one as well, because if you have people that can't eat certain things, you may need to edit in a way where some of your side dishes, for example, might be, you know, dairy-free or gluten-free or low-carb or whatever. But just know that if you pare back your offerings, you're going to be able to get more things done at a higher quality, and your food is probably going to be better overall. And people are going to appreciate whatever you serve them. They don't need all of that crazy amount of food, because if you're like me and have done those sorts of things in the past, you know that 70% of it doesn't get eaten anyway, because there's so much food, not everybody can eat all of that. So tip number two, simplify and edit. Start with a basic menu and grow it a little bit from there until you feel that you have, you know, a nice, solid table and enough dishes that can satisfy all of your guests. Okay, tip number three, and I don't think you all probably do this anyway, but I want to just be explicit and say that you don't need to make everything from scratch. I know there's a lot of folks out there that think if I'm cooking for myself and my family and I'm cooking at home, everything needs to be as unprocessed and as healthy and as scratch made as possible, because that's just the way I want to cook. And that's fine. But know that on a crazy day where you're hosting, you know, 15 people or something, maybe for a holiday gathering, it's not always realistic to cook everything from scratch. And that's okay. You know, you need to take advantage of what is available to you as a home cook to do what you can from scratch, if that's how you like to cook. But don't do it at the expense of being able to spend time with your family. You don't want to spend your entire day in the kitchen cooking and you don't get to talk to anybody, for example, or that you're spending weeks and weeks ahead of time, you know, prepping things that you're going to be using on the big day because you have to make everything from scratch. No, don't do that. Find out, you know, put a little thought into the dishes that you're going to be making and think, you know, what are the components that I can, I'm not even going to say cut corners on, because that's not really what I'm trying to say. What are some of the components in my dishes that don't need to be scratch made? So one example might be things like chicken stock or turkey stock or vegetable stock. Don't get me wrong, homemade stock is amazing and it's tough to beat. But at the end of the day, when you're cooking for a big holiday gathering, you know, maybe it's just a good idea to not take the time and the stress, if you don't already have it on hand, to make stock and just buy stock pre-made. It's not going to be the end of the world, for example. One of the things we do, we love pies. We're not great pie bakers in this family, I hate to say it. There's this little company up the road called Willamette Valley Pie Company, and they make pies that you basically take home and bake, and they're freaking delicious and they're really good quality. And I've never had one person complain about me serving a Willamette Valley Pie Company pie at a holiday gathering, because the pies are delicious. And all I have to do, it's like a take and bake pizza, right? All I have to do is pop it out of the little box it comes in and throw it in the oven and bake it for an hour at, you know, 350 or whatever. And I've got an amazing handmade pie that I can serve my guests. Whereas, you know, making a pie from scratch, that's a lot more effort, and that's going to take a half a day for me, you know, the morning of, or a couple of days before, or whatever, the big day to deal with. So that's a place, for example, that I look, and I don't have to feel like I need to cook something from scratch to make folks happy. You know, bread and rolls is another one. I know from our Facebook group that a lot of the listeners are really, really great bread bakers and bakers, and they're always posting photos of these amazing loaves of bread and rolls and whatever that they're turning out. I wouldn't consider myself a great bread maker or a baker, but I could do it, and it would be great. But again, that's sort of another place I look at not making something from scratch. I mean, I will go to the local bakery and pick up some dinner rolls and serve those at Thanksgiving rather than try to make them myself. Because again, I'm just looking for ways to save some time and sanity for me on that big day when I'm trying to make all this stuff come together. Or even the days before leading up to it, where I'm trying to make a few things ahead. I'm not looking to make everything from scratch. So, and again, I suspect a lot of you probably already don't make everything from scratch, and there is absolutely positively nothing wrong with that. That's a very smart way to go. So just remember tip number three, not everything needs to be made from scratch for the big holiday get together. Okay, tip number four. This is, you know, may or may not be doable for your particular situation, but if you can, you should ask for help. So it is a ton of work to put something together for a holiday, you know, family gathering, for example, you know, serving the food, getting the house clean beforehand, prepping the ingredients for your food, making the dishes, you know, serving guests, cleaning up afterwards. For one person or a couple people to do, that's a lot of work, and it can oftentimes rob you of the quality time you should be spending with your family, right? There's been many a time through nobody's fault but mine where I've just been kind of in the kitchen cooking till the very last minute, and I just haven't had really much time to mingle and talk with my family and friends who have come over to spend, you know, their afternoon together at our table. And so I'm trying to teach myself, don't try to do everything by myself. So what do I mean by that? Well, perhaps you have guests that can show up a little early and will be willing to help you, you know, cook, or, you know, simple things like setting the table, or maybe you have a family member or something that can come over a day or two ahead of time and help you clean up and just get ready for the crowd. Maybe you can recruit folks to bring some side dishes. We do this all the time. We have family members, you know, we don't cook everything when a family comes over for Thanksgiving. I'll make a turkey and mashed potatoes and, you know, maybe something green. But beyond that, we have folks bring the bread and the rolls and maybe a sweet potato dish and desserts and all that kind of stuff. And it just takes a lot of weight off the host's shoulders, right? When you have folks that are willing to do that. So don't be afraid to ask for help. And on the other side of this coin, even if you're not hosting, if there's any way that you feel comfortable offering your help to who, you know, whoever it is, like if you're going to someone else's house for a holiday gathering, if you feel comfortable offering help in the kitchen or cleaning up before or after or bringing a dish, I would totally encourage you to offer to help if you can. The host will appreciate it. It's a fun way just to be involved. And, you know, I know people who complain that they don't host holiday dinners and they're bummed out because they don't get the chance to do that sort of a cooking. So, you know, offer to bring food. That's one way to get involved. It's a really great thing to do. So asking for help and offering help is tip number four. And that's a big one that can help you survive your holiday hosting duties. All right, moving right along. So tip number five, this is probably my favorite tip. It's a very practical, tactical tip. But I started doing this several years ago. And honestly, if you take no other tip away as useful, I hope you take this one, because it really, to me, is a lifesaver on the day of the dinner or the gathering or whatever. And that is write down your plan. And this is like tearing a page right out of a catering playbook, right? So you've got a crowd of people you need to cook for. You have a variety of things you need to prepare and cook and make. Keeping that in your head and trying to make it all come out right is, if you can do it, you're either extremely skilled or extremely lucky, or probably a little bit of both. And it's not something I recommend doing, even for the most skilled home cook. If you have a big dinner you're trying to pull off, it really helps to write down what you need to do. And the way I do it, in the morning I get up, and this is another tip later, I'm going to talk about making stuff ahead of time. But even if I've made stuff ahead of time, I get up the morning of the dinner, we'll just say, for example, and I'll just take a blank piece of paper and I will start writing down, you know, on one side of the paper, you know, what are all the main dishes I need to make? And I leave some space between each thing. So I'll put down, you know, the main dish, side dishes, again, leaving space in between, desserts, you know, sauces or condiments, or, you know, whatever it might be. I write everything down. And for the more complicated things, like some of the side dishes, like for mashed potatoes, for example, I might say, you know, mashed potatoes as a heading. You know, one subheading under that might be boil the potatoes. It's, and then I try to put some times around them. So if I'm making a turkey, you know, roast the turkey will be one of the main headings. And I'll try to write, you know, when working back from when I know everything needs to be done, I'll try to write down, you know, when these things need to start. It might seem a little clinical and it might seem like overkill, but it's very, very handy just to have a list that I can cross things off as they get done. And I can see at a glance what needs to be done, what I haven't started yet, what I'm running behind on, what I can use some help on. It's a lot easier to delegate some help if I have it written down and I can say, oh, Mary, yeah, can you peel some potatoes for me or whatever. So writing down your plan for me has been a huge, huge, huge lifesaver when it comes to hosting these holiday gatherings, right? So however you decide to document it and lay it out so it makes sense to you, maybe it's just simply listing it out like I do. Maybe there's something else that you would prefer to do, but I would really encourage you on the day, the big day, we'll say, is to write everything down so you can see what is ahead of you. And you're not just about ready to put everything on the table. And then you look around and go, oh, I guess I didn't put the rolls in the oven. Oops, you know, because it just got lost in the back of your mind with all the other stuff you were doing, all the people you were talking to and things like that. Now, tip number six, now that you know everything you're going to make, you kind of know if people are bringing anything, is make ahead anything that you can make ahead of time. Anything you can reasonably make early the morning of, or the day before, or a week before, or whatever. Figure out what you can make ahead and do it. And, you know, truth be told, for let's just say a Thanksgiving dinner where you might have a turkey and potatoes and some beans and some carrots or something like that and some rolls and gravy and cranberry sauce, you can make practically everything ahead of time if you wanted to, and reheat it when you need it, if it even needs reheating. But there's a lot of things that I think is just incredibly wise to make ahead of time. If you're making cranberry sauce from scratch, you can totally make that the day before or a couple weeks before and throw it in the freezer, right? There's no reason you should have to worry about that on the day you're trying to make everything else come together. It's just something that, you know, is going to add dirty dishes and it's going to take up stovetop space and measuring cups and just attention that's going to take you away from your guests and trying to finish all the other stuff you've got planned. So stuff like that, you should absolutely make ahead. You can make cranberry sauce ahead. You can make gravy ahead. You can even make ahead mashed potatoes. I have a recipe I'll try to find and post in the show notes for like day before mashed potatoes, where you make them up and then you throw them in a crock pot and then just put them on low a few hours before dinner time and they'll be ready to go. I mean, typically for me, potatoes, mashed potatoes, which I serve at every Thanksgiving dinner, I'm usually making those at the very last moment because I want them fresh and hot right before I put them on the table. But this make ahead recipe works really well and the potatoes turn out pretty good. So that's another thing you could make ahead of time. So whatever you can make ahead of time, you absolutely should try to do. Remember, the day you're trying to make this all come together, stove space, oven space, kitchen space is all going to be at a premium. You're not going to have all the room you wish you had to make everything right in the moment. So as many things as you can get just heating up in the oven where you don't have to pay any attention to them, for example, is a really good thing. So find out what you can make ahead and do as much of that as you can. Okay, those first six tips were somewhat practical. These last two tips are, I guess you could say, maybe a little more philosophical, maybe a little less practical, but nonetheless, I think they're important to keep in mind. And you might not even agree with these tips, but take them for what they are. I think they're important. So tip number seven is don't worry about a day of indulging. So what do I mean by that? Well, let me just explain it from personal experience, because I do find myself doing this and I have to sometimes remind myself it's not in the grand scheme of thing, it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, we try to eat reasonably healthy, right? So when we make things for ourselves at home, I'm usually, you know, trying to make lower fat or lower calorie versions or lower sugar versions of recipes that, you know, still taste good, but aren't quite as decadent or as, well, you know, fatty or high calorie or whatever, as they might be in the cookbook. I think sometimes when we look at, if that's something you try to do, I think when we look at something like a big holiday gathering with all these foods and desserts and just yummy things all around us, our brain kind of goes to a place where it's like, my gosh, this is incredibly unhealthy. And I've got to make everything as low, as healthy as I can to survive this day. And I hate to say it, but sometimes if you go too far in that direction, you can make stuff not taste real great or, you know, it's just, I guess what I'm trying to say is one day of eating things, of you know, indulging in something like a Thanksgiving Day dinner with your family and your friends, if you're lucky enough to have that opportunity, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal. And relieve some stress on yourself as the host of the big day and not worry too darn much about how healthy is all this food, how low fat is it, how, you know, unsugary is it, is my pecan pie, you know, low carb, whatever. Don't worry so much about that. I mean, if you need to worry about that for health reasons, of course you should, but look, face it, you're not eating Thanksgiving dinners and Christmas dinners and holiday dinners, you know, every day of your life. So once in a while, it's not going to be the worst thing for you. So I know that came off a little preachy, but I'm just using it from my own personal perspective. I try not to worry about that. You know, the day after Thanksgiving, I'll make a healthy turkey sandwich or something, and, you know, I'll be back to not overindulging. But on Thanksgiving Day, you know, what the heck? You're with family, you're with friends, and you've made good food. You might as well enjoy it. Okay, so my last tip is actually not food related at all. It is kind of, but I would just say that it's not all about the food. Remember, as a home cook, you're excited to cook this food, perhaps, or you look forward to the challenge. You want to make delicious food. Sometimes you get bummed out if your stuff doesn't come out quite like you had hoped. It's not quite as flavorful. The turkey didn't brown up quite as nicely as you'd like. Whatever. Happens to me every year. There's things that turn out fantastic, things that are fine, and then usually a few things where I'm like, dang, that didn't quite work out like I wanted it to. And it does kind of bum me out because you think, you know, people are coming to my table and I want to give them the best meal that I can. And, you know, if it doesn't work out that way, sometimes I can be hard on myself. And I know you probably can too, but you just remember that it's not all about the food. The food is a wonderful byproduct of these holiday gatherings. And for those fortunate enough, like you and I, I'm assuming if you're listening to the show, who can have, you know, plenty of food at a holiday gathering, we can kind of, you know, get hung up on the whole eating and food aspect of it. But don't forget that family and just the time that we get to spend together, as infrequent as it is in today's day and age, is really valuable as well. And the food is something we all get to share in. But really, without that sense of community, without the family and the friends, the food would mean very little beyond just nourishment, right? So I guess what I'm getting at here is if you're hosting a holiday gathering, be sure you build in time to be able to spend time with your family and your friends, and don't just be stuck away in the kitchen grinding away trying to get the food done while everyone else is connecting and bonding and having conversations. And I know sometimes it's a tall order to do this with your family, and sometimes you want to be stuck away and grinding away in the kitchen because that's the place where you don't have to deal with folks, perhaps. I get that. But don't put so much weight on the food aspect that you kind of overlook the other really, really important points of a holiday gathering. So again, that sounded kind of preachy, and I didn't mean it to, but those were just a couple of tips that weren't necessarily cooking or food or planning related that I just wanted to get by, because I think about those myself, and they help me get through the stress of hosting these holiday get-togethers. And if you've done it, you know it's stressful. So hopefully some of these one or two or all of these 8 tips can help you get through with a smile on your face and excitement to do it again next year. Well, folks, I hope those tips were useful to you, or at least some of them were, or maybe at least sparked some new ideas. If you want the list, you can head over to the show notes at episode 147 at kitchencounterpodcast.com/147. Also, as I mentioned earlier, if you have hosted holiday gatherings in the past and have picked up good tips of your own, I would love to hear about them. Shoot me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Head over to the Facebook group, kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. Shoot them to me on Twitter @TKC Podcast, whatever. Would love to hear about them and share them with other folks so we can spread the wisdom around when it comes to hosting holiday get-togethers. All right, well, that will do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. You know, I feel very lucky to be able to do this and talk about something I love and share it with you good folks who somehow find me and engage with me. And I really, really appreciate it. And I have a lot of fun with it. I hope you do too. All right, everybody, until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. If I don't talk to you beforehand, happy Thanksgiving, but I should have at least another episode out before then. All right, everybody, until next time, happy cooking.